This week on Vaticano, delve into the remarkable initiatives of the Bambin Gesù Hospital as they dedicate themselves to saving lives and delivering cutting-edge pediatric care to children worldwide. Join us for the newest installment of Roman Nights, focusing on the intersection of art and evangelization. Plus, immerse yourself in the fourth part of our captivating series exploring the wonders of the Vatican Museums. Vaticano starts now. Pope Francis has once again spoken out in favor of protecting life and the poor. After the Holy Father was unable to travel to the COP28 conference in Dubai as planned due to his illness, the Vatican Secretary of State, Cardinal Pietro Parolin, read out the Pope's message in the United Arab Emirates.
The destruction of the environment is an offense against God, a sin that is not only personal but also structural, one that greatly endangers all human beings, especially the most vulnerable in our midst, and threatens to unleash a conflict between generations.
Pope Francis canceled his scheduled trip to the United Arab Emirates days before the climate summit at the request of his doctors, after coming down with a flu infection that left him with breathing difficulties and acute bronchitis. On November the 30th, when the climate conference began, the Pope warned on social media that the conference's strategists should focus less on business interests and more on the common good and the future of children. In the pontiff's keynote speech, which was read out by Parolin, Pope Francis condemned the common assertion among some scientists that the poor and the high birth rate in some countries are to blame for the climate crisis.
Particularly striking in this regard are the attempts made to shift the blame onto the poor and high birth rates. It is not the fault of the poor. The poor are the real victims of what is happening. Births are not a problem, but a resource. They are not opposed to life, but for life. Whereas certain ideological and utilitarian models now being imposed with a velvet glove on families and peoples constitute real forms of colonization.
The Conference of the Parties is an annual climate change summit of the United Nations, held since 1995. One of the major achievements of the COP was the ratification of the Paris Climate Agreement during COP21 in 2015.
Carlo Acutis's charity was very local and hidden. It was amongst the poor of the streets, the beggars, but he too dreamt of a better tomorrow for those lost ones of our society. I think that's where the saints make a difference. They don't only think of today, but they think of a better tomorrow.
One of the core messages of the pontificate of Pope Francis is human fraternity. In response to this, the Diocese of Assisi instituted the International Award Francis of Assisi and Carlo Acutis for an economy of fraternity. And today, the challenge was issued. Organized by the Diocese of Assisi with the Sanctuary of the Renunciation, the initiative aims to inspire people with scarce economic possibilities, especially the young people under the age of 35, to come together and present a project to benefit and meet the needs of the most disadvantaged and neediest in their midst.
Profit is to look after oneself only. Obviously, we need profits in the world, but the point is, what do we do with those profits? And here we have an award that gives people the opportunity to create a new mentality. This is a mentality where we'd certainly help a group of people, often taken from the streets, handicapped, suffering from diseases.
The last winner of the award of 50,000 euros was given to a project in Chad, one of the poorest nations in the world, to support the Bethlehem House of the Bread project. 12 poor and needy young people are now working together, accompanied by the local Franciscan Angeline sisters, to build and develop a bread-making laboratory.
progetto nasce perché abbiamo raccolto.
The project started because we collected the dream of these kids who go to school, but the preparation is not enough. Even though they go to school and even have a diploma, they would not have the possibility of a future. We saw that in that place, bread could be a resource, bread production. But the idea came mainly from them.
Ma l'idea è nata soprattutto da loro.
Si tratta di trasformare l'economia che uccide.
Once again from Assisi, the message of St. Francis and Blessed Carlo Acutis gives concreteness in line with the initiative of the Holy Father, who through the economy of Francis has invited young economists, change makers, and entrepreneurs to found again the economy by giving it a soul.
Hello and welcome to this week's Vaticano Updates. Pope Francis sent his condolences to the family of Indy Gregory, the British baby who died last month after UK courts ordered her life support removed. The 8-month-old baby died in a hospice in November. The Holy Father called the death of Indy the loss of a precious child of God. On the feast of St. Andrew the Apostle, Pope Francis sent a message to Ecumenical Patriarch Bartholomew I of Constantinople, expressing his fraternal affection and reflecting on the deep bonds of faith, hope, and charity between the two churches. Every year, the Holy Father sends a message to the Ecumenical Patriarch, who is the successor of St. Andrew and the first among equals in the Eastern Orthodox Church. 4 people killed and 54 injured. The bomb attack on a Catholic mass took place in the city of Marawi in the Philippines. The Islamic State, or ISIS, claimed responsibility for the bombing in a telegram message. Pope Francis expressed his condolences to the families of the victims. High tech in the Vatican. The Pontifical Academy of Sciences had invited a team of researchers in the field of quantum mechanics for a 3-day workshop. Its goal was to harness technological innovation for the benefit of everyone, not simply developed nations and their citizens. Pope Francis' prayer intention for the month of December is for people with disabilities. The Holy Father urged civil institutions to support their projects through access to education, employment, and places where they can express their creativity. Francis also encouraged everyone to be more open to the abilities and talents of these people who are differently abled, he said, both in society as well as in the life of the Church. Thank you for watching this week's Vaticano Updates. Andreas Tonhauser for EWTN Vaticano.
In a few moments, we'll be back with more on Vaticano. Christmas season is usually a time of joy, celebration, and togetherness. Unfortunately, not every family gets to celebrate the festive season together. At the Bambin Gesù Pediatric Hospital in Rome, hundreds of children and their families are facing what may be the most difficult time of their lives. In the midst of the numerous challenges and suffering, however, the Pope's very own hospital stands as a beacon of hope for families with sick children.
Io stamattina entrando in ospedale.
This morning, as I entered the hospital and stepped into the elevator, I passed a father with his child on a gurney. He told me that they had just had a transplant, and in the father's eyes, I saw hope. This hope is precisely what the Bambino Gesù Hospital aims to give to each patient and family each day.
Instilling hope in its youngest patients is what the hospital's president, Tiziano Onesti, defines as the institution's most crucial mission, particularly during the Christmas season. He emphasizes the importance of his staff supporting and accompanying children through what may be the most difficult time of their lives.
During the Christmas season, we try to send the children home. but many, unfortunately, have to stay here. So we tried to let them live lives as close to normal as possible. For instance, we are now in a playroom where the children get to further their growth and maintain hope.
Founded in 1869 by Roman Duchess Arabella Salviati, the Bambin Gesù Hospital is one of the oldest and most renowned children's hospitals in the world. In 1924, the Salviati family donated the institution to Pius XI, making it the Pope's hospital, and to this day, under the direct governance of the Holy See.
The Salviati family suggested that the hospital be named after the child Jesus, symbolizing every child and reflecting the hospital's dedication to the smallest, most vulnerable, and defenseless and their families. This is the spirit which animates us in carrying out the hospital's mission, which, as we are always reminded, is the hospital of the Pope.
Throughout his pontificate, Pope Francis has been actively involved with the Children's Hospital. His frequent visits and heartfelt interactions with the children and their families consistently highlight the significant place the hospital occupies in his regard. The Pope has, on many occasions, emphasized that the Bambin Gesù is unique, not merely because it's affiliated with the Holy See or situated close to the Vatican. Instead, it stands out as a place where contemporary science, specialized care, and Christian hospitality come together in an unparalleled way.
I admire the passion and enthusiasm that you put into your care and research, and I wish that you never lose the ability to catch sight of the suffering face of a child behind an analysis sample, and to hear the cry of parents within your laboratories. May the mystery of children's suffering never cease to speak to your consciences and continue to motivate your human and professional commitments.
In the last decades, the hospital has become known for its high level of specialization in the treatment of children coming not only from Italy or neighboring European countries, but from the world over.
We have several humanitarian and cultural exchanges of expertise with doctors in other countries. In total, we have developed initiatives in 16 less fortunate and more economically disadvantaged countries all over the world, such as some in the Far East, like Cambodia and Africa, or South America, where we have many types of collaborations.
In addition to collaborating with local hospitals and sick shelters in poor countries in order to improve and provide health care, the Bambin Gesù Hospital also works tirelessly to bring sick children to Rome at the requests of foreign governments or non-governmental organizations.
We have taken in many children. I'm thinking in particular about the Siamese twins from Central Africa who were born, excuse me for the somewhat brutal term, attached by the head. We were able to separate them, and now they live tranquil lives as they normally should.
Tranquille come normalmente deve essere, insomma.
So you work at a very high medical level, but at the same time, you then also provide care. For example, also I understand these Siamese twins, they're still in your care, no?
We never abandon children, but we don't only take in the children, we also take in families. We shelter families for months, several months at a time, many times with really desperate cases, families who have nothing, who are poor, sometimes even destitute. We see to it that they can remain close to their children, and we work to take care of the welfare of their family. We aim to give them hope. We really aim to give hope to children and their families, to everybody. Even during the Christmas season, the hospital is always very well staffed, and we make sure that the children who have to stay here get to experience a holy Christmas as a time of family intimacy, even though it is a difficult time in their lives.
To give hope, this is what the Pope's hospital strives for, not just within its walls, but reaching far beyond, both to children and their families, especially as Christmas draws near.
Revelation. And of course we have scripture and we have the liturgy, but very early on, the Christians understood that art would be a very powerful form of communication.
Art and beauty have been cornerstones of the Catholic tradition. Since the earliest days of the faith, artwork has had a central role in evangelization. One just has to look at the Sistine Chapel, or Gothic cathedrals, and stained glass windows to feel pulled into the Christian story. Throughout Catholic history, it has often been the artist who has been the greatest evangelist. On Friday, December the 1st, the EWTN Vatican Bureau decided to explore how art can inspire faith and missionary activity by hosting the latest edition of Roman Nights inside the Vatican City walls.
Welcome. It's my privilege today to host you, to guide you also through this evening. We decided on a topic which has grown especially very close to our hearts over the last months, treasures of art and faith. Also because we collaborated with a Vatican museums not far from here.
To unpack the pivotal role art plays in sharing the faith were three panelists. Liz Lev, an American art historian who has been giving tours and pilgrimages of the Vatican and Rome for over 25 years.
The beauty of the work of art is the hook, and then this possibility of I want to know more, and then revealing that underneath it there's this great vision of redemption, of humanity, of salvation that really makes the work shine.
Reverend Professor John Wach of the Pontifical University of the Holy Cross in Rome was also called to speak on the spiritual significance of sacred art.
Going into a church is, for anyone, as a believer or a non-believer, a transforming experience. There's a wonderful phrase in Henry Adams' book, Mont Saint-Michel in Chartres, where he talks about how St. Thomas's Summa is the greatest church ever built by man, and the Gothic cathedrals are the best expression of that. So there's the intellectual church and there's the architectural church. And when you step into St. Peter's, you're stepping into Catholicism.
I think in doing that.
Also on the panel was EWTN's very own documentary filmmaker, Anthony Johnson, who shared with the audience the impact visiting the Vatican Museums had on him as a young man.
Because when I went there for the first time when I was 19 years old, I was a little bit dumbfounded by the fact that the Vatican had all these ancient sculptures. Not that they were all Christian, so to say, but it was very, not strange, but it piqued my curiosity as why we as Catholics would collect things that are not a part of Catholicism. And it's this appreciation for humanity and for all of creation, which is what I learned from that.
Throughout the evening, the great Catholic tradition of art and beauty were summoned over and over again. The Vatican Museums serve as that repository of spiritual and artistic treasure meant to be shared with the whole world. Of all the pieces of artwork gathered in the museums, one was echoed more than all the others.
The Sistine Chapel so amazing and why it's so successful is that at the end of the day, whether or not the people in there realize it, in this incredible series of paintings, which show the beginning and the ending of human history. I mean, it brings every single person together in that space, because this vision of this Genesis, these bare bodies first kind of realizing their power, making their first fall, making fools out of themselves in the drunkenness of Noah, and then led to this promise of salvation, that's, everybody can understand an origin story. I mean, Marvel excels at that. All we get is origin stories from Marvel. And then there's a sense of what is our purpose? What are we for? And there it is in the same room, the Last Judgment. So it really, it's the most extraordinary space. And what makes it so wonderful is there's only one religion. There's only one belief system that could have produced that room. And it's the Catholic faith. It's ours, and it's amazing.
We'll be back after a short break with more on Vaticano. In the evening, on the third day of their 40th anniversary celebrations, the patrons of the arts of the Vatican Museums visited the Papal Basilica of St. Mary Major in the center of Rome.
That's pretty spectacular.
Here they attended Holy Mass and reflected on their mission with treasures of art and faith before them.
This ancient basilica enshrines the venerated image of Salus Populi Romani, perhaps the oldest Marian image in Rome. We find Jesus, the Savior who is born for us, always close by, always inseparable. This is the message we found through this ancient place of worship. God is with us.
The coming of the Lord is the greatest love story ever told. When we see a beautiful work of art, we're reminded of that gospel story. And so those who have never heard the wonderful story that God loves them and came and became man in order to save them, by looking at a masterpiece and asking, what does it mean? What is the story? They can find this wonderful story also for them.
When speaking about restorations in the Vatican museums, we shouldn't only think of single pieces of art like a painting here or a statue there, but really about the museums themselves that are a big work of art. A good example for that are the Borgia apartments where we're at right now, with beautiful ceilings and where those frescoes have been restored by the patrons of the arts of the Vatican museums, really bringing to life those beautiful paintings with their vivid colors and textures.
Another place where frescoes are brought back to life are the Raphael rooms, inside the Hall of Constantine after 8 years of work. Scaffolding now scales the final wall needing restoration. Restorers are putting on the finishing touches. Up close, one can even see the difference between the old and the new frescoes. In addition to frescoed interiors, scaffolding surrounds sculptures too large for the laboratory. This bronze statue of Hercules is approximately 4 meters or 13 feet tall. It was discovered in 1864 underneath the courtyard of a villa near Campo dei Fiori in Rome. The ancient Romans had buried it there according to their religious customs because it had been struck by lightning. At the Bramante courtyard, the colossal marble head known as the Agosto Mattei was discovered in the 16th century in a small vineyard on the Aventine Hill. Restorers are using a mortar made from lime, marble powder, and other natural materials to repair damages and facial features.
When you are given lots of art, you are given the responsibility to also care for this art. There is a missionary aspect to the art as well. Art evangelizes, and I believe art evangelizes in different ways. Not necessarily an immediate conversion, but slowly but surely evangelizes people and changes people's hearts.
With this in mind, even pagan art can teach us about the relationship between God and man when observed in the proper context.
Pagan art is very important because it testifies that man always searches for God. We can go and see these wonderful images of the Greek and Roman gods. And we're reminded that there's something innate in man, and this is true from all time. And so, if you like, by looking at these ancient collections, we're preparing people to receive the revolution, which is the truth that God became man and walked on the earth.
Next week on Vaticano, we come to the final installment on the patrons of the arts of the Vatican Museums as they reflect on the journey ahead and receive a private audience with the Holy Father.